Stars Over Surrey with Dave Jemetis and John Extell from the Guildford Astronomical Society.
Hello, I'm joined by John Axtell of the Guildford Astronomical Society. Welcome, John.
Hello, Dave.
Now, later on we'll be talking about what can be seen in the night sky for the coming month, but let's start with what's happening in the world of space flight and astronomy then, John.
Okay, Dave. Well, last month we spoke a bit about Peggy Whitson, the current commander of the International Space Station. Well, she's been in the news again. She and another US astronaut have made an unscheduled extra spacewalk because they had a problem. It was to fix a control unit that's actually only been recently deployed on the outside of the space station. She had a bit of a struggle with a troublesome bolt holding it down, but she was able to replace the failed external computer. It's called a multiplexer, demultiplexer, and controls a number of external units. There are actually two fitted to the space station, but one is enough to cope. However, they like to have their built-in redundancy, and so the space station was never in danger, but they like to have it covered. While she was doing that, her crewmate, another American, Jack Fisher, installed a couple of antennae to improve wireless communications on future EVAs. So she'd already set records, had Peggy, for the oldest lady in space, the longest serving American astronaut in terms of missions and time in space, and also the number of spacewalks. So now she's extended that record already. So that's her 10th extravehicular activity.
Well, how long has she been in space altogether then?
A total number of hours is 60 hours, 21 minutes. That's her total EVA time.
Oh, wow.
So, clearly quite a character, quite a lady. Apart from that, just moving out a little bit, well, whilst we're talking about space stations, I did want to mention something that's happened of interest quite recently, and that's the Chinese space station, and that's called Tianzhou. Sure, I'm not pronouncing that perfectly, but that's my best attempt. Tiangong is the space station. And I believe that means Heavenly Palace. But they've had their very first resupply mission to it. You're familiar with the ISS. We have the Progress space capsule that goes out there. We've had Japanese-built space capsules, European ones, American private ones like the Cygnus spacecraft going up resupplying. Well, it's the first time the Chinese have attempted this. And their craft docked. The station is unmanned at present. The previous crew have left. But it's the first time they've done this, and they plan to separate and then redock another two times to prove the capability. So this is really quite an essential step before in China's plans to have a permanently manned space station like the ISS. Not as grand, not as big, but they plan to do this by 2022. And if listeners are interested, you can actually go outside and see the International Space Station. I saw it about 1 o'clock this morning when I was out observing, and it's ever so bright. It's even brighter than Jupiter, which is also up in the night sky at the moment. Tiangong 2 is less bright. That's about the same brightness as a third magnitude star. But you've got to know where and when to look. So there's a splendid website called www.heavensabove.com with a hyphen between the heavens and above. So heavens-above.com. If you've got an iPhone, there's also an app called Sputnik. That's S-P-U-T-N-I-K with an exclamation mark after the K. So, for example, tonight, the 26th of May, if you want to see the International Space Station, go outside, look in the southwest at 20 past 10, and it'll rise in the southwest, and it'll reach a maximum height of about 47 degrees in the south after about 2 or 3 minutes. And it'll take another 2 or 3 minutes to cross the sky to the east. And if you missed that one, then try again a little bit later at 4 minutes to midnight, where it'll rise in the west, and it'll be virtually overhead at 3 minutes later, so a minute to midnight. And just look on that website. It gives you a 10-day forecast for the ISS and other satellites like Tiangong for the coming 10 days. It's always really interesting to know there are, at the moment, I think it's 5 astronauts up in the International Space Station just sailing a couple of hundred miles up above your head. Interesting. Last month, Dave, we also talked quite a bit about Cassini, which is on its last stage of its mission to Saturn. That, and I talked about it's going to make 22 dips down in its final orbits in the gap between Saturn's innermost ring and the surface of the planet. So it's now made 5 of those dips. And on the last of its dips, they were using an instrument called the Cosmic Dust Analyzer, and that was attempting to collect data that is going to help scientists to assess the age of Saturn's rings. We think that they're relatively recent, 30, 40,000 years, which in astronomical terms is almost yesterday.
Well, the rings of Saturn may only be 30,000
years
old.
Yes.
That's surprising.
It is, but we don't know for sure. That's the theory. And there are several theories about its formation. Is it perhaps a failed moon of Saturn that got too... Well, a moon that got too close and was broken up by the gravity? We think mostly not. Probably more likely a comet, or maybe more than one comet, that has approached Saturn at such a speed and an angle that it didn't collide with the planet, but has got broken up by the gravity, and all of the ice that makes up the comet has been spread around. So that's what this latest survey from Cassini is hoping to ascertain. What they're going to look for are materials that are deposited by tiny meteors, micrometeors, that are constantly bombarding these rings. And they'll leave behind silicates, organics, metals. And the idea is that these should be detectable by this dust analyzer. And the more that's deposited, the older the rings. And that they think they know the likely density of these micrometeorites, and so therefore they could extrapolate to see how long it has been collecting those. So an interesting result we hope to get fairly soon. It's also been taking pictures of Saturn's largest moon, Titan, making further discoveries there. Although it's passed Titan before, this time, it's recorded some weather systems that have never been seen before. White belts high in the methane atmosphere of the planet. The next dip is on the 28th of this month, and it passes close to the D ring, the innermost ring of Saturn. Now, on its very first dip, they were very worried about possibly colliding with particles coming in from the rings. But in the end, they hardly spotted any, and they called it the Big Empty as a result. They were really surprised at how empty of particles this space was. So to protect against this perceived threat, they had turned Cassini's big dish, a 13-foot diameter disc-shaped antenna, and they faced it forwards to its direction of travel so that it would act as a shield against these tiny particles. But as there were so few, they didn't bother with all of the last few dips through the gap. But for this next one, because it's passing so close to the E-ring, where there probably will be a lot of particles, they are turning that dish around to act as a shield. Now, what that means, of course, is if it's not pointing at the Earth because it's pointing elsewhere to act as a shield, they lose contact with it. So there'll be anxious times, I'm sure, in the control centre, because they won't get contact back till the following day after it's gone past the rings and then orientates itself to try and recover Earth and so that it can send its signals. A little bit further out in the solar system, of course, we have Jupiter. And there's another NASA mission doing great things out there. It's Juno made its fifth pass over the cloud tops of Jupiter and collected what has been described by the scientists as a treasure trove of data. So it's such a harsh environment, though, next to Jupiter, that it has to have all of its instruments kept in a titanium vault to protect it from the radiation. Its next pass will be in July. It's on a long orbit where it comes close to Jupiter every 53 days. So in July the 11th, it's going to be passing directly over Jupiter's great red spot. So that's going to be fascinating to see what it can learn about that. That's a huge storm, sort of cyclone, but it's been there on the surface of Jupiter ever since man started turning telescopes onto Jupiter. So many hundreds of years ago, that storm has been raging all of that time. I think I'll move to deep space now. There's a couple of interesting topics to tell you about. And one of them is about an aircraft, in fact. NASA has got a Boeing 747, heavily modified, that it uses as an observatory. And this observatory is called SOFIA. And what that stands for is the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. And they've got a massive telescope on this plane. It's called, an infrared telescope. It doesn't work in visual light, but in the infrared wavelength. But it's a 100-inch telescope, the sort that you have in places like Mount Palomar or that sort of size telescope. But you can't do that much infrared astronomy from the surface of Earth because of the atmosphere. It gets in the way. But at the heights that a jumbo can reach, it sends back fantastic results. And now that's been studying a system of exoplanets on a star only 10.5 light years away, which is relatively close in astronomical terms. This star is called Epsilon Eridani. Science fiction buffs out there might recognise that as the name of the system where the TV series Babylon 5 was set. So I don't think they're going to discover anything like that out there. However, what is of interest is that that particular star is very similar to the Sun, but a younger version of the Sun. It's similar in size and composition. And they've been able to detect, using infrared studies, that that solar system has rocky planets like our own and an asteroid belt outside of those rocky planets. Our rocky planets are Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars and Mars, and then the asteroids, and then we have Jupiter. Now, this Epsilon Eridani system also has a Jupiter-sized planet in a very comparable orbit just outside the asteroid belt. So, interesting for scientists to learn about solar system formation around stars very similar to our own. And another thing that's going on outside, well, we mentioned ET just then, Dave, but there's a star called Tabby's star.
Oh, yes, we love Tabby's star.
Well, its real name is KIC 8462852, but sounds
that's
a lot
boring.
It is Tabby's star. Yeah, and it's named after Tabitha Boyajian, an astronomer at Louisiana State University. She's been studying the light curve from this star, and it's like nothing that's been seen before. Now, we know about what we call variable stars. They change brightness on a regular basis. Some of them pulse, and so they get brighter and dimmer. But we understand that operation, and it's predictable. They have a regular rhythm of bright and dark. But this isn't the sort of star. It's a type F star, so should actually be stable, not one that varies in brightness. And what's more, this one's dimming and brightening is irregular. There is no noticeable pattern to it at all.
But we know why. It has a Dyson sphere.
And that's one of the theories. That's one of the theories. So interesting. Poor Dyson. This is Freeman Dyson. He had a thought who was a theorist. He's 93 now and he's still an emeritus professor. But he had a thought experiment that worked out an advanced civilization would need so much power that perhaps the only way they could capture that power would be to build a shell around a star to capture all of that star's light and focus it for power. But it actually wasn't his original idea. It was a science fiction author called Olive Stapleton who came up with this in the 30s in a book called Star Maker.
Well, we all know it from Star Trek, of course. We've seen it on TV, a Dyson sphere.
That's right. But not only in Star Trek, but also on a famous book called Ringworld by Larry Niven. That's sort of like a Dyson sphere. So that is one of the theories, because if it was, usually a star will dim, an exoplanet may cause a star to dim by blocking out some of its light. But even a star like, a planet as big as Jupiter would only cut down 1% of that star's light if it passed in front. Whatever it is causes about a quarter of the star's light to be blocked. So whatever it is must be humongous. So there are theories. Could it be a huge swarm of massive dusty comets that are causing the lights to be blocked? But those comets would have to be massive, 100 miles across and thousands of them. So that's been largely discounted. Maybe a massive planet, perhaps a failed star. That could perhaps be the answer. However, sometime last year, the brightness returned to maximum and there was no more dimming. So all of the interest and furore has died down. But last week, it started again. And just for a short burst of 3 or 4 days, everybody's watching to see if it happens again. And all of the big telescopes have had a look at this star because it is so unusual. Hubble has looked at it, the Keck Observatory, and also the SETI Institute, who look for radio signals. They've turned their antenna onto this to see if they could pick up any radio signals from an extraterrestrial civilization there, just in case. But nothing's been found. But we will keep watching. So keep watching the skies, Dave.
Great. Well, thank you for the update there, John.
The month ahead for Stars Over Surrey.
Now, John, what will our listeners be able to see in the night sky over the next month?
Well, June sees some splendid constellations coming into view, Dave. So I'd refer our listeners to the WhatsApp slides for June that are already on the Stars Over Surrey page on the website. And they'll see Leo that we mentioned last month, this month's constellation, Boötes, and Hercules and Cygnus and so on. So look at the website for those. But there are some interesting planets to look for. Mercury is of particular interest this month because it starts off the month as a morning planet, an hour or so before dawn. So look in the east-northeast, as long as you've got a good, flat, unobstructed horizon. But at the end of the month, it will have moved around the other side of the sun, and so it will become an evening planet. So both morning and evening in the same month. So about half an hour after sunset, at the end of the month, you'll find it. Low in the northwest. Venus is brilliant in the morning as well, massively brilliant, magnitude -4.3, so visible from about 4 a.m. Until sunrise. Jupiter is the dominant planet in the night sky, visible all evening. It is beginning to dim as it moves away from us now, but excellent as a disk in good binoculars and small telescopes. But Saturn is now coming into view as an evening object now. So it's due south at about midnight, at 1 o'clock in the morning, rather, on the 15th. And at this point of its orbit, observers will see the rings brightening as they fully reflect the sun, which is directly the other side of the Earth from Saturn. So they're so much brighter, one or two days either side of opposition, which is on the 15th. Moving on from the best planets to look at, let's have a few events. On the 3rd and 4th, Jupiter is just a degree south of the Moon, so that makes a nice picture. There is a comet this month. It is a faint comet, so it's not one that's going to be naked eye visible, but listeners with binoculars should be able to find it, and it's not far from Arcturus, the main star of my constellation of the month, Bootes. So look at the slides on the website for a map of all about Bootes, where Arcturus is, and look at a special map I've included that shows the path of the comet during the month. On the 9th, if you haven't found Saturn before, then find the Moon, and 2 degrees below the Moon will be a bright object. That's Saturn. So easy to find. And Venus and the Moon make a nice pair on the 21st, just about an hour before sunrise. There are a few meteors this month, the 27th. Bootes again, that's the radiant where the meteors seem to be coming from. But it's not a huge shower, but you should see some. So that's on the 27th. Jupiter makes a nice picture with the Moon again on the 30th, near the first quarter Moon. So go off to the slides for my constellation of the month, Bootes, the herdsman, and a few double stars of interest there. Now, meetings at local societies. Well, my own society, Guildford, has a talk on Thursday the 1st of June by Professor Donald Kurtz from Central Lancashire University. It's about identifying exoplanets using the Kepler Space Telescope. So, planets and pulsations, the new Keplerian revolution. Farnham Astronomical Society, Tuesday the 13th, New Horizons and the Exploration of Pluto. One of their own members, Kevin Pretorius, chap I know well, is doing that talk. At Croydon, they've got again a couple of their own members doing talks. First of all, on Friday the 9th, Conrad Mallin-Smith doing In the Beginning, and Pauline Gorman doing Introduction to the Antikythera Mechanism on Friday the 23rd. Antikythera Mechanism was an ancient Greek object that was discovered in a shipwreck made of brass and other metals, and it was a mashed together mess, but they've taken it apart and have realised that it seems to record the positions of the planets. So it was centuries ahead of its time.
It's an amazingly intricate mechanism. I remember seeing the photos of that.
Yes, indeed. So they haven't fathomed all of its uses, but they realised that it could be used to predict the positions of the planets at the future from when it was built. So fantastic. Ewell Astronomical Society on Friday the 9th have a talk by Graham Bryant, for the chair of Hampshire Astronomical Group, and he's talking about a local Surrey family, a Victorian family who lived in Sutton, and they were solar observers, and so his talk is Sun, Sea and Smoke. Sky at Night, if you want to do astronomy on television, an interesting one on Sunday the 11th of June, BBC 4 at 10. It's called Inside God's Observatory. So this is from the Vatican. Not everybody knows the Vatican actually has a very powerful observatory. They work in astrophysics, researching the first moments of the universe. They're quite happy with the Big Bang concept, and they're actually joining in the search for extraterrestrial life. So again, people might think that a dichotomy, but not so, not according to the Vatican. So, most interesting. In fact, the Big Bang was put forward by a Jesuit priest, a Belgian Jesuit priest. Again, an interesting idea. Last thing, if I may, Dave, is a shout out for schools in June. There's an organisation called Spacelink. So do look at www.spacelink.org. So if you're a teacher or a parent of children doing key stages 3 to 5, they've got 3 free webinars in June. One about comets on the 5th of June, one about the sun on the 22nd of June, and one about, great title, How to Build Your Own Lightsaber on the 29th of June.
I love that.
That's by Dr. Martin Archer from Queen Mary University. The others are done by lecturers or scientists at the Mallard Space Science Laboratory, Surrey's own space science laboratory down at Holmbury St. Mary. They're also doing an event called Get Space 4. So that's a free STEM event, science, technology, engineering and maths, suitable for children in years 5 to 9. That's July the 4th at 10 till 3 at Broadwater School, Guildford. Lots of space-themed talks and activities. I'll be there with my solar telescope showing children the sun quite safely through special telescopes only designed for looking at the sun. But also, more interestingly, will be Britain's first ever astronaut, Helen Sharman, who went up to the Mir space station back in 91, I think it was. So, Dave, that's my roundup of what's up in the night sky.
That's fascinating, John. Thank you for the update. Now, this show will be repeated on Monday night at 11 p.m. and is available for after transmission as a podcast. The next edition of Stars Over Surrey will be on Friday, 30th of June at 7:30 p.m.
Stars Over Surrey with Dave Jamatis and John Axtell from the Guildford Astronomical Society.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with the Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.